Anyway, where were we? Barry Sloan-White, he's on the line with us right now. You know what? There aren't many guys in the handout industry. Barry, you're going to hate me for saying that, but you know what I mean. Who I just really stinking like, and this is one of them. Dude, it's been so long since we talked. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, actually, but just listening to you here, it just brings back a whole lot of memories.
A whole lot of cringe-worthy memories.
Oh my goodness.
I just said that.
I thought maybe over time you might have softened a bit.
What's with the softening? I'm saying that, you know, there are a lot of charities out there, a lot of my hand is out, you know, ministries, and what we used to call them fly in the eye commercials and all that kind of stuff. And it's a real competitive market, which sounds icky when it comes to, okay, we're doing good work, please support us. There's so many, and I've been a sucker for compassion right from the get-go. And I think originally it had a lot to do with you because you're not an arrogant jerk. How's that?
Okay, that's good. I'll take that one.
Yeah, and that's our interview with Barry Sloan-White. Enjoy your day, folks. Barry, a couple things. Let's get right into it. First of all, how's your half hand?
Oh, my goodness, you got a good memory. It's doing well. It's been 10 years. Since my hand was amputated, the doctors did a great job. They took some crazy glue, stuck it back on, and it's doing pretty good. I'm able to lift a full suitcase, and I'm able to do even some chores around the house with it. But it comes in handy when my wife wants me to do something I don't want to, right?
I was just going to say. Well, I wouldn't say it comes in handy. That's a little insensitive.
Well, you know, yeah. But no, it's doing good. It's really an incredible miracle, and there's not a day goes by I don't look at it and just thank God and just amazed what God and the doctors, the therapists were able to do.
All right, let's tell everyone this story. Let's gross people out. What happened?
Well, I grew up in a carpenter's house.
I don't want that long of a story.
Well, yeah, I got to give you context. So I do carpentry work as a hobby, right? I used to do it professionally, but I do it hobby. And I was renovating my house, and I was using a chop saw or a miter saw. And my hand and the saw blade connected, and my hand ended up laying on the floor. And that's the story.
I shouldn't laugh. Oh, brutal.
It's gory.
Just brutal. You've made three people in the room just to have, like, mini barfs. It's kind of gross. All right, second thing, Barry, that's very important is after 73 years at Compassion, you're retiring?
I am. I'm moving aside, so...
Hold on. You just made it sound like you got fired.
No, I'm moving aside into a different role. So
okay.
A year from next month, so October 25th, 2019, I'm going to be stepping out of the role as president and CEO into a part-time role of president-elect, and I'll be spending most of my time all of my time out of the office, doing speaking, doing some more writing, some video projects, things like that. So I'm looking forward to that. It'll be on the 17th of this month. It will be 35 years that I started working with Compassion.
35 years of Compassion. I just discovered the word compassion. I just discovered how to practice compassion in the last year, and you've been doing it for 35 years. So well done, man.
It's been a great journey. God has been so kind.
How do you explain to people how compassion, let's talk about compassion first, how compassion is different than a lot of other child sponsorship organizations? How do you stand out? How does compassion stand out?
And the word different is a great word. It doesn't mean better. It doesn't mean one's right or one's wrong. It's different. So different in that the traditional child sponsorship organization that most people would know uses the community development model. So the concept is you develop the community, you make life better for the people in that community. Compassion's model is very, very different in that we actually work with individual child development. So we develop individual people and in turn encourage, strengthen, motivate, equip them to change their own village, their own environment. So that's one way we're different. The other way we're different is we only work through local churches in the developing world. So we have about just over 7,000 churches in 25 countries. Each of those churches house or host a Compassion Child Development Center. Each one of those with roughly 200 to 300 children who come on a regular, weekly, sometimes daily basis. And we are investing in their lives as individuals, taking the long-term approach, starting at birth, actually, and going right through to high school and hopefully beyond high school. We've got just over 50,000 children now in university and college around the world.
Well, I don't know, about, I'm trying to think now, 13, 14 years ago, Compassion and the Drew Marshall Show did a little work together, and I went down on an advocacy tour, and I went to Nicaragua, and I went into this small, you know, village, as is the case, and seemed very much off the trail, and dirt roads, and I mean, just huge potholes and the whole thing, and we're in our little, you know, white people tour bus.
Mm-hmm.
And we pull up to this place, and there's a little schoolyard and chain link fence around and concrete, and kids having a just gong show of a good time. It's quite hilarious to watch these kids. Kids are kids, and you know, we've all heard that. Same around the world. And anyway, you start to walk through the little village that's beside the school. And I mean village, I mean like maybe 30 huts. And when I say huts, they're put together by, you know, corrugated metal, you know, recycled stuff and plastic and bits of wood and pretty down and out. And all of a sudden I saw this tall guy. And now in Nicaragua, that's an oxymoron. But I'm 6'4", and I saw a guy that's 6'4", and I thought, oh, who's this guy? So I went over, and turned out his name was Nelson. Very humble guy. Just, I saw it just from his demeanor and the way he spoke, very quiet, a soft, gentle, humble man, quite opposite to myself. And he had a giant goiter on his neck, a huge mushroom thing growing out of his neck, and it was a toxic goiter. And I found out that the reason that they're living in these shacks is because, well, in order to not die from the toxicity of this thing, he has to take one pill a day, and that pill costs I think it was like $1 or $2 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was making $1 or $2 a day. So, boom, you're homeless, just so you can live. And I something hit me, and I just started turning into a softie with this guy, and we ended up praying for him, and I was just sobbing like some embarrassing thing. We ended up sponsoring his daughter, Ruth. My daughter came with me on the next trip and brought like 8,000 bottles of nail polish for Ruth. And the listeners of the Drew Marshall Show raised some money, and we helped build a house for Nelson and his family.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And I remember that.
And Nelson and his family. So Nelson, his wife, he's got a daughter named Ruth, and then a little boy, I can't remember his name. Well, we go to look at the place, and the next tour, you know, walk around the place, and, you know, it's a concrete block. It's not palatial by any stretch of the imagination, but it ain't no shed, that's for sure. Well, they've got the whole stinking community using the house. You want to use our bathroom? Come on in. You want to use our shower? Come on in. Want to sit in our living room? Come on in. We're the only ones with a sort of a proper house. And what does he do? He lets the entire community use it. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal to know that the Drew Marshall Show listeners could have that much of an impact.
Absolutely. That's powerful. And you know, Drew, that's so typical. We think in terms of North America, you know, if we have something, we hold on to it. But the poor, when they're giving something, their natural tendency is to share it.
Yeah.
Whether it's I've seen children give them a piece of licorice and they break it in two or three pieces and give a piece to their friends. It just blows my mind every time I see it.
Well, let's talk about this book, Strategic Compassion, Reuniting the Good News and Good Works in the Fight Against Poverty. Barry Sloan-White is on the line with us. In the bio for the book, it says, Jesus proclaimed good news for the poor. And I think any people that don't even know the Jesus stuff know that there's some connection between taking care of the poor and Jesus. And if you're a Jesus person, you better be taking care of the poor. So even, quote, outsiders get that.
That's right, absolutely.
But the problem, and as you know, I like to point out the problems, Barry. The problem is that the Jesus people have kind of distorted that message. Can you help me understand how this distortion is. Pull it apart. What am I talking about? I kind of know what I'm talking about, but I'm not good with words. Barry?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. When's the last time you heard a sermon in church that challenged your perspective rather than your pocketbook when it came to the topic of the poor?
Yeah, well, when was the last time I heard a message in church, period, would be an answer. I mean, a question.
Online or whatever. But the point I'm making, we've been served a steady diet of guilt and obligation. And we've come to believe that the answer to poverty is simply more resources. So what do? We gather our youth together and we have another car wash, or we do another bike-a-thon, or we do some kind of mass market campaign, or we do some guilt-ridden TV program. That's really what has happened in our North American mindset. And most books and marketing message that you would read on poverty, they speak to the method and the means of poverty alleviation, and they're filled with all kinds of stats to encourage us to give more. So in this book, I focus on the root cause of poverty and the biblical strategy to fight poverty effectively.
Is this, I already know your answer, and I hate to ask you this question, but so let me ask it and then back away and re-ask it a different way. Kind of sounds like this book is for pastors and spiritual leaders and small group leaders and, you know, the church leaders. But I guess the reality is that kind of book can't be just for spiritual leaders. It's going to impact anybody that reads the stinking thing.
Yeah, so my audience are leaders. But remember, leaders come in all sizes. So yes, the pastor of a church, yes, the seminary professor or seminary student, yes, the small group leader, the home church or whatever, but yes, the parents. We want parents to read this book because we want them to teach their family about the true definition of poverty and the true methodology of how to help the poor. And the reason for the title is because I'm a person of strategy. I like the plan. I like to have a plan. And my wife teases me because she says, you can't even get in the car and go to the mall without already thinking about where you're going to park when you get there.
You got a problem, man.
Right. I have a problem. But here's the thing. Over 35 years, I've seen far too much work done, money expended, without a plan, without a strategy. And I've seen far too many churches whose mission program is what I just simply call the shotgun approach. You pull the trigger and you hope one or two of those pellets hit your target, and many of them don't. So my call in the book is twofold. One, let's look at the theology of poverty and let's get that right. And then let's take a moment to plan and do this work of helping the poor more effectively, so that the end of any given time, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, we could look back and we can quantify the results.
Okay, Barry Sloan-White, author of Strategic Compassion, Reuniting the Good News and Good Works in the Fight Against Poverty. So I read that title, Barry, and you're not going to like this. I just fall asleep. And the reason I fall asleep is because the word, the fight against poverty thing, I don't know what way to attack that myself, personally, so I shelve it. The second thing is the poverty drum in the Jesus scene, especially the evangelical scene, oh my goodness. And it's like, I don't know if it's like a crying wolf thing or whatever, but Jesus said, hey, you're always going to have poor. So stop saying you're going to alleviate the poor. You're going to end poverty. It's not going to happen. So what do I do with all this stuff swimming around in my head? Let's start with the fact that I'm a North American male, desensitized, sarcastic, judgmental jerk. Wow. Is this a therapy session? And I hear about the poverty stuff and I go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, it just sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, wah, wah. What do I do, man? How do you wake me up?
Well, the thing is, we have all been put on earth to make a contribution to earth, to life, to people, right? And there's a big division. There are the haves and the have-nots. And the haves often look at the haves-nots as, well, there you are, you're lazy, you got too many kids, you whatever, and you don't have, I worked hard, I've got what I have, I earned it. The Bible says that we're all equal. We know that there are many, many, in fact, I learned this lesson early in my career with Compassion. Most people in the developing world that are poor are not poor because they're lazy. I tell you, they make me feel like I'm lazy. They work hard. But what happens is the corruption around them, the lack of shared resources, puts some people in a worse position than others. So we're called, those who have, we're called to help distribute those resources fairly so that we can make life better for everybody. Yes, the Bible does say there'll always be poor people. Why? Because we could never, ever keep up with the huge demands of poverty, because the demands of poverty are exasperated because of evil, because of corruption. There's always going to be evil. I mean, look at Venezuela. Look what happened there. Look what's happening. There's always going to be evil, and evil will always create poverty, because broken people create broken systems. So let's establish that there's always going to be poor, but that doesn't let us off the hook of being a good neighbor to the poor and help as many as we can.
Barry Sloan-White, give me one strategy. Tease us into this book, because you're the author of Strategic Compassion, Reuniting the Good News and Good Works in the Fight Against Poverty. Give me the one strategy that you think a desensitized jerk like me is actually going to get.
Well, I think that what I can talk to is the holistic strategy. We must be holistic in our approach to help the poor. We can't just do food aid. We can't just do education or health care, or we can't just do biblical training. We must do all things, because human beings are made up of four quadrants of human development. That's a social, economic, and then there's the physical and the spiritual. So we must address all four if we are going to produce an individual who can step out of poverty. And all four must be in place. And that's the message of this book. You can't leave any one of those out.
A little while ago, I interviewed Dr. Sue Johnson, the relationship guru. She was talking about how in relationships, couples, you know, married couples, that they try to fix their relationship, you know, because the dance is wrong. They talk about relationship being a dance. The dance is wrong. So they try to change their dance moves, when in reality, what they need to do is just change the music. I wonder if there is a parallel there with what you're talking about, Barry, with regards to that whole sit in a message at church and they guilt you into giving, as opposed to changing what?
Yeah, so guilt is never the right approach. We give out of guilt, we're starting off on the wrong foot altogether. We need to understand that poverty is a big, huge world problem that also has its roots in the spiritual world. So in the book, in the Theology of Poverty, I take you right back to Genesis, and I track the origin of poverty from Adam and Eve's sin and the fall of man right through to present day resources and strategies. Mm-hmm. So we must understand that throwing $20 in the church offering plate or making a pledge online or whatever is not the answer to poverty. It's the answer to guilt, but it's not the answer to poverty.
So your line at the beginning of this interview, you said something, I can't remember it, man. I wish I wrote it down. It's not about changing, what is it again? Oh, do you know what I'm talking about, or am I just way out in left field in this one?
No, it's, and my question to you was, you know, talking about,
when was the last time you heard a message
on poverty that challenged your perspective rather than your pocketbook?
And that's what I'm trying to make the correlation. You know, it's not about changing the dance moves; it's about changing the music, and the music is the perspective in this case. I think
absolutely.
Yeah.
You look at all the billions of dollars that has been designated to poverty alleviation just over my short lifetime, billions of dollars. And you have to look really, really hard to find a return on investment that would be adequate. But you look at the investment made into children of poverty with these four quadrants, heavily, heavily including the gospel, because it's the gospel that addresses the inner heart of mankind, of children and young adults and men and women. You will see that with a very small investment of money, we get a great return on investment. So the good news is that Jesus Christ came to earth to bring a life-saving gospel to the poor. Jesus did all the other things. He had the largest feeding program in the world in his day. He was the best medical doctor known to man. He was one of the most famous teachers and educators. But that's not why he came. He came to earth in Luke chapter 4, verse 18, to bring the good news of the gospel. And unless that is the center of our poverty alleviation efforts, we are going to fail.
Well said, man. Barry Sloan-White, author of Strategic Compassion, Reuniting the Good News and Good Works in the Fight Against Poverty, compassion.ca. Barry is also the big cheese at Compassion Canada. I think it's a more official title. What's the title again? What are you?
You make me laugh. President and CEO.
That's what I meant. Yeah. I was just speaking French. The big fromage. Barry, I wish you the best, and
Thank you, man.
To see your face again sometime.
Lovely. You bet. Thanks so much.
Bye, Barry. Barry Sloan-White on the Drew Marshall Show. I like that guy. He's a good guy. Because, I mean, can you imagine they sponsor a kid organization with some flashy, arrogant putts running the thing, you know? It'd be like, I don't know, donating money to Benny Hinn. It doesn't make sense. I don't get it. Just my opinion. Oh, wait. The opinions expressed on the Drew Marshall Show are solely his, not of the station's. There, is that better?